Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Brochos Daf Mem Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 11 lines from the top of Daf Mem Zayin. You'll notice that we have a Maisa marking that started at the top. At the end of that long marking that you see to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, we begin our Sugya. Before beginning the Gemara, on the side of the Gemara we have a topic heading, Mosai Maschilim Lechol B'Suda. Fairly general topic heading, but it reads as, from what point in time or when does one begin eating at a meal? We'll deal with halachas here that we can fall under the realm of protocol as viewed through the eyes of Chazal. So, Omar Rav Yehuda Breid Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas Mishmei Derav. Ein ha-mesubin rashoin lechol klum ad shiyitoim habotzea. The people assembled around a meal are not allowed to le'echol. Here we've dashed underlined le'echol. Its significance will be in a minute or two. But the essence is that no one is allowed to eat until the one who led the hamotzi, who broke the bread in the making of the hamotzi, until he tastes first from, until he eats first. Yosef Rav Safra v'komar lit'oim itmar. Rav Safra was seated, and he said that the halacha that you just cited, instead of saying that the mesubin are not allowed to lechol means to eat, they're not allowed to taste anything until the one who led the brocha of the, over the bread eats from the bread. So order of things is, the one who ate from the bread, made hamotzi over the bread, first he eats from the bread, then we can talk about other people eating. So the Gemara wants to know of what significance is this correction that Rav Safra made. As far as the actual halacha is concerned, there doesn't seem to be any difference. So the Gemara asks, Lamai nafka mina, of what difference does it make whether you say that the people are not allowed to lechol versus not allowed lit'om? So the Gemara answers, Shechayev odom loymar b'loshen rabo. What the message conveyed over here is that one has to be precise in saying things over using the same language as they received it from their teacher. Tanu Rabbanan, we have a Tanaic source dealing again with this topic of protocol in eating. Shnayim mamtinin ze loze bikora. If you have a communal bowl, and you have two people eating from this bowl, so each one waits for the other before taking from it, before eating from it. Shlosha ein mamtinin. If there are three people, then there is no necessity to wait for all three to start eating before you can take from it. Habotzea hu poshet yodo tchila. The one who led the brocha over the bread, so he is the one that reaches into the bowl first. He takes from the bowl first. And if he wants to bestow an honor to his rabbis, to his rebbe, his teacher, or to someone who is greater than he, so even though he led the recitation of the bracha over the bread, nevertheless he can bestow the honor to take first to someone else. Rabo bar Barchano have osik lei lebrei bei Rav Shmuel bar Rav Katina. Rabo was preparing a wedding for his son in the home of Rav Shmuel. Kodim v'yosiv v'komasni lei lebrei. So Rabo sat with his son, who is getting married, and taught him rules of meals. And he taught him the following: Ein habotzei roshei livtzoa ad shiichle omein mipi ha'oinim. The one who is leading in the brocha over the bread is not allowed to pull apart the bread until the omein is finished. The people who were listening to the brocha and respond omein until they finish responding their omein. The Rashi says, "Achich le omein mipi ha'oinim." Omein achar b'chas hamotzi. We're referring to the omein after the hamotzi brocha. The afanias omein min ha-brocha. That omein is actually part of the brocha. V'amrinam perakeitzim v'borchim tzoch shetichle brocha kodem b'tzia. In the sixth parak, the Gemara said that the brocha shall be finished, and we're saying omein is part of the brocha, so the omein must be finished before the pulling apart of the bread. As we go on in the Gemara, we have a topic heading that reads Dine Anias Omein, rules regarding omein. So in our Gemara, we started this with this particular source that Rava was teaching his son, that the Botsea, the one who is leading the brocha over the bread, is not allowed to pull apart the bread until omein is concluded by those that are responding. Rav Chista Omar Mipi Roiv Ha'oinim. Rav Chista says that the concern here is only that the majority of the people answer are finished with their omein. You might have some people that are practicing some type of operatic pronunciation of the omein. They don't have to be taken into consideration. Omale Romi Bar Chama Maishno Ruba. What is different about the majority, the Akati Lo Kalya Brocha? Because up till that point, the Brocha is not completed. Miutanami Lo Kalya Brocha. Well, even if the minority have not finished, so the Brocha is still not said to be complete. The suggestion of this question seems to be that one should wait for everyone, not like Rav Chista said, just the majority. Amalei, so Rav Chista answers, Shaini She'ani Omer, I say, Kola Oyna Oyman Yosir Midai, anyone who stretches out the Omein more than is necessary, Eino Ela Toya. He is merely making a mistake. There might be more connotations in this word Toya, but we're giving you the literal definition. Tanu Rabbanan, Ein Onin, and as we said, we're continuing with rules of Omein. Ein Onin Lo Omein Chatufa, Velo Omein Ketufa, Velo Omein Yosoima. 3 points just mentioned, let's go over them. One should not say Omein Chatufa. Rashi explains Chatufa is where the Aleph of the word Omein is pronounced without the, is pronounced in a in too rapid a fashion. In other words, the Aleph has a vowel, a komatz under it, which is would be pronounced all, and one should be careful to pronounce the Aleph with its proper vowelization and not a slur over it. V'lo omein ketufa. Ketufa is a situation where the mistake, so to speak, is at the end of the word, where the end of the word omein is a nun, and he doesn't articulate the nun. And lo omein yesoma, Rashi says, shelo shoma habrocha. He didn't hear the brocha, elo sheshoma sheinin omein, where all that he heard is other people answering Amen, so he answered Amen. That's not enough. And Rashi goes on to explain, based on the Gemara and Sukkah, what we're aiming for here is that a person, even if he didn't hear the bracha, but if he happens to be aware that a bracha was just completed, so that is sufficient grounds for answering Amen. But not a person who simply hears other people saying Omein and not understanding what they are responding, who just joins in with them. That's an Omein Yesoma. Yesoma literally is orphaned. In other words, the Omein is orphaned from the source for its being said. Other halachas, velo yizrok brocha mipiv. A person shouldn't too hastily recite a bracha. Rashi says b'mehirus, because one who says a bracha too quickly, it appears that it's a burden to him. Ben Azai Omer kol ha'oine omein. Now Ben Azai goes over these halachas and applies what type of outcome could result. So Ben Azai says kol ha'oine omein yisoma. You bonav yisoma. This is a very horrendous outcome, if you will, but he who answers omein in a way that it's called an omein yeso, meaning it's an omein response not associated with his knowledge of a brocha being completed, so his children will be orphans, and that obviously connotes that the individual himself will die, leaving his children orphaned. Chatufa, someone who answers an omein that is Chatufa, as we mentioned earlier, that's without mentioning the aleph with its proper vowel of a komatz. So yischatfu yomav. So his days, his life will be grabbed away. Will pass quickly. Ketufa, if he answers an Omein Ketufa, so Yiskatfu Yomav. That also is it's a seemingly a similar connotation of one's life being cut off early. The Chol HaMarich B'Omein, and to the contrary, one who extends the Omein, of course, within reason, so then Marichin Lo Yomav Ushnoisov. He is blessed with a lengthy life. Rav Ushmuel Havuyasi B'Sudasa. A story involving these two Rabbonim, Rav and Shmuel, that were sitting at a meal. Also Rav Simi Bar Chiya, have a commissar of Ochil. Rav Simi came along later, and he joined in the meal of Rav and Shmuel, and he tried to eat very quickly. His goal was to finish his meal together with Rav and Shmuel. In other words, they were basically the end of their meal. He came along and ate very quickly to become part of a zimun, so that he should, they with three people there, they can make a zimun. Omar le Shmuel, also Omar le Rav. Rav says to Rav Simi, "Ma daitoch? What's your kavone? What's your intent? It's the rufi b'hadon to join up with us. That's why you're eating so quickly. Anon achilno lon. We finished eating already." Rashi says, "Achilno lon gomro lon sudasenu kodem shabasa." And your coming now isn't going to obligate us in a zimun. Omar le Shmuel, so Shmuel points out to Rav, and he says, "Ilu maisu li ardilia, the gozlaya la'aba. If they would bring ardilia to me, it's some Rashi says it's commanded pitchers. We'll call them mushrooms and truffles. If they would bring serve us now that as a dessert." And they would serve you, Gozlaya. Gozlaya are young birds. Mi lo achlinon, would we not eat? So therefore, since we would eat, even though actually we finished eating, but we would continue to eat if we were served these dishes, so our meal is not considered over, and therefore he, Rav Simi, could join to create a zimun. Talmid Rav Havayasi Besudasa. The students of Rav were seated at a meal. Ol Rav Acha. Rav Acha entered. Amri, they pronounced. They said, Osa Gavra Rabo de Mavarachlon. A great man has come in who will lead our Birchas Hamazon. Amar Lahu, so Rav Acha said to them, Misa Risu de Gadol Mavarach. Who says that the greatest one is to lead the benching? Iker Shem Suda Mavarach. Rashi says, Iker Shem Suda, Echod Me'osan Shem B'tchilas Hasova. The one who was first, who was the main person, the important person, who was there from the beginning of the meal. Vilchasa Golo Mevarach. The Gemara, however, rules that the Golo, the great, the important person, will lead. Avagav the Osel Basov, even though he came at the end. The Gemara doesn't spell it out, but it seems quite obvious to say he came late, came toward the end of their meal, and he must have eaten something, and hence he is the one to lead in the bracha, because the lead in the benching, the Birchas HaMazon, because he is the Godol. The Gemara now goes back to the Mishnah. There were many details in the Mishnah of different kinds of food items, where the Mishnah says if you eat a kezias, an olive quantity of, and it listed the different things, you are able to join the zimun. Then it gave a list of examples of things that eating them will not enable you to join in the zimun. You're not considered having eaten something that's halachically acceptable, and hence you don't count as one of the three people to create a zimun. So our Gemara now continues with those examples, and also, by the way, on the side of our Gemara, under our topic heading, we've indicated that the Noseh goes Ad Sof Omid Beis, so our topic heading is to last till then, and we've written here Biur Prote HaMishnah Alma V'Almi Mezamnin V'Lo Mezamnin, regarding those things that are worthy of, and who is worthy of joining and creating a zimun, and who not. Ochal demai v'chulei. At this point in the Mishnah, we said that if one ate demai, he ate a minimum quantity of demai foodstuff, he will be able to create a zimun. He could be the third man. Now, demai is produce that one purchased from an amoretz, Rov Amoratzim are mafresh. The majority do tithe, but the minority do not. And the rabbis impose an obligation to tithe from Demai. And if you don't tithe, so you're not allowed to eat from it. So the Gemara asks, how can you tell me that if you eat Demai, so that you are able to join and create the Zimun, Halo Chazile, but it's food that's not fit for him. He's not allowed to eat it. The Gemara answers, Kevan de Iboi, Mifka Luhulu Nichse, since a person could, in potential, declare unowned, and abandon all of his property, Vavi Oni, and thereby become impoverished, the Chazi lay, and Demai, at that point, is actually something fit for a person. He's entitled to eat from it. A poor man is entitled to eat from Demai. So since a person has the potential right now of making himself impoverished, Demai is something that has potential right now as being fit for him. Disnan, the Tanaic source says, Machilim Asaniyim Demai, Vesu Achsanya Demai. The Tanaic source says that one is allowed to feed to the impoverished and to the king's army. The Achsanya is Chayel Shemelech, Rashi says, to feed them Demai. And Rashi points out that the truth is that the majority of Amoratzim do tithe their produce properly. So on a total level, the poor are not eating something that's unfit. They're eating something that only has a tithe requirement as a rabbinic stringency. So the rabbis are able to rule when their stringency applies and when not, and they never applied it to the aniyim. The Omer Rav Huna, Tana, Rav Huna tells us that a Tanaic source reveals, Beishamai is stringent and will not allow Demai to be fed to the impoverished nor to the king's forces. Maisa Rishon Shinit Lo Trumaso. So the Mishnah said that if one eats from Maisa Rishon, whose tithe has been removed, Maisa Rishon is that tithe, one is 10% of a person's produce that's given to a Levi. The Levi, in turn, is expected to tithe from that which he received, another 10% of his tithe. Of, in other words, it's 10% of 10%, or you could say it's 1% of the entire harvest, is then given by the Levi to a Kohen. That's called Trumas Meiser. So the Mishnah says that Meiser Rishon that was properly tithed, so a person who eats from that is able to join in a Zimun. So the Gemara says, Pshita, that's obvious, he ate something that's quite alright, it's been properly tithed. Loi tzricha, the Mishnah's teaching is necessary. Elo shigdimo b'shibolim v'hifrish menu trumas meiser v'lo hifrish menu truma gedola. This is a special case where the Levi higdimo came early b'shibolim when the grains were still in their stalk form, their we'll call it somewhat raw or unprocessed form, before they were winnowed and piled up into a kri, into a pile. So the Levi took his 10% from, we'll call it, in stalk form. And he, what did the Levi do? He then was mafresh from the stalks 10% to give to a Kohen. However, he didn't mafresh from it the tithe known as Truma Gedola. Truma Gedola is the tithe that the owner of the field, had the Levi, let's say, not shown up, the owner would have removed from his harvest after it reached a stage known as Gemar Melocha. The owner would have removed a tithe known as Truma Gedola, which Midoraisa is really Kol Shehu, Midorabonon, it's, we'll say, 2%, just to keep things simple. We have a Levi that came, took from the harvest before it became bound to have any tithes removed. What did this Levi do? He tithed the stalks that he took, his 10% that he took, he took off Trumas Meiser, but he didn't bother taking off the Truma Gedola tithe from that which he received. Uchid Rabbi Avo, and this behavior is okay, it's legitimate, based on Rabbi Avo's teaching. Dem Rabbi Avo, Amar Reish Lakish, Meiser Rishon Shigdimo B'Shibolam, a Levi who came early, Higdimo, once again we said he came early, he came before the Kohen came, and in fact it's before the owner is expected to have tithed anyway, because it hasn't reached a Gemar Malacha. So you have this Levi that came early, and he took his 10%, his Meiser Rishon in sheev form, Potter Mitruma Gedola. He does not have to take off the Truma Gedola tithe that would have been taken had things waited, had things delayed till the right time. Shenemar, and the basis of this exemption is, the Pasuk says, V'aremosa mimenu trumas Hashem meiser mina meiser. This is an appeal to the Levium that says that they shall take off from their meiser rishon a tenth of a tenth, which is the trumas meiser tithe. And we infer from this Pasuk, meiser mina meiser martiloch, the Almighty expects the Levi to take off a tenth from his tenth, v'lo truma gedola u trumas meiser mina meiser, but not the truma gedola tithe in addition to the tenth that he's taking off as trumas meiser. So we see from this pasuk that the Levi has a legitimate right to behave as he did, taking off only the trumas meiser tithe, based on a pasuk and the inference therefrom. Amar le Rav Popo Labaye. So Rav Popo says, well, if this is the proper reading of things, then I hochi afilu higdimo bekri nami. Imagine an owner had finished the processing, we'll say, of the grains till it reached what's called a kri. Kri is after the stalks and the chaff have been removed from the grains, and now the grains are piled up into a pile, and it's smoothed out. At that point, the owner would be expected to remove 2% and give to the kohen, and then take 10% and give to the Levi, and the Levi would remove his trumas meiser from that. Are you suggesting, says Rav Papa to Abaye, that if the Levi came before the Kohen, but at what point, at this later point of grain processing, would you say that the Levi is exempt then as well from removing the Truma Gedola tithe from these grains? Amale, so Abaye says back, Olecha Makro, the Pasuk says to you, meaning addressing your case of Levi coming before Kohen at the Kri stage, we're at the top of Omid Beis, Mikol Matnoseichem Torimu, from all of your tithes. And Rashi points out this is in the Parsha of the Levium, so it's addressing the Levium and saying that from all of the gifts that you receive, Torimu, you must take off Truma, and Truma means here Truma Gedola, the formal, the basic Truma tithe. So here you have in this Pasuk, which is addressing the Levium, the necessity of removing Truma Gedola. It's interesting, though, in the Pasuk before, when the Levi was addressed, it said that he didn't have to take off the Truma Gedola. So the Gemara asks, Uma Royis, what is it that you see that over here, in the case where he comes before the Kohen, when it's reached Gemar Malacha, that the Levi is obligated to remove the Truma Gedola tithe from his portion? And in the case where the Levi came in the Shiv state, he was not obligated to take off the Truma Gedola tithe from what he received. So the Gemara answers, there's a basic difference, also based on the Psukim. Hai idgan, v'hai lo idgan. Idgan comes from the word dogon. It's a verb form of the word dogon. Dogon meaning grains, but grains, after their grains are called dogon when they reach the Kri stage, when they reach the stage that the chaff and the stalks that have been removed from them, and they are piled, and the pile is smoothed out. Regarding that, the pasuk says Reishis degoncha titen lo. That's a pasuk degoncha, and the word idgan is the verb form of that. At the point that the grain is called dogon, because it's reached the Kri stage, it's only at that point that the chiyuv of Truma Gedola sets in. Therefore, before that, if the Levi came before it reached the dogon stage, before it reached this piling up of the grains without the stalks stage, there was no Truma Gedola obligation to begin with. Therefore, when the Levi was makdim the kohen b'shibolim, all he had to mafresh was the trumas meiser, the 10% of his meiser rishon, but not anything else. Hashamosh she'ochal kizayis. The Mishnah featured the shamosh, the waiter who was waiting on two people eating, and he sat down and joined them and ate a kizayis, an olive quantity of food. He becomes a member of the Zimun and imposes a chiyuv Zimun. The Gemara says, Pshita, well, of course, it seems fairly obvious. Mahu detema. So one might have thought, Shamash lo kova. Rashi says, Lo kova, ein lo kvius, lefi sholech bo. He's not a fixture. He's not established. He's not fixed. He's not permanent. He is very transient. He's going back and forth, feeding, serving food to all the different people that may be in the room. And hence, as a result of that, you don't have what we call kvius suda. This is a throwback to sugyas that we had regarding hasava and yeshiva, if that is or not enough. So we're lacking kvius, you might have thought. Chomash Malon, so as far as the halacha of zimun is concerned, it's enough that he sits there and eats a kezias, and that thereby obligates the group now, because they've now become three in a zimun. Vakusi mizamnin alof. The Mishnah said that the kusi is able to join in a zimun, create a chiyuv zimun. The Gemara asks, Amai. Now the kusi, we have to understand, is a group of people whose origin are from Gentiles that converted to Judaism, and their descendants are their practice of Judaism. You find it throughout the Shas as being questionable of how committed they were to Judaism, how effective their original conversion was. It's a topic that is what's called Shonui B'Machlokis. It's a subject of great controversy. So the Gemara is asking here, how is it that a kusi creates a chiyuv zimun? Amai. Why is that? Lo yehei elo amoretz. Let him be no different than an ignoramus. V'tanya ein mezamnin al amoretz. There's a Tanakh source that says that you don't have amoratzim joining in a zimun. So to get out of this problem, the Mishnah on the one hand saying the kusi mezamnin alav, and you have this Tanakh source that would indicate otherwise. Two approaches. Number one, Abai Omar, Bikusi Chover. Here we're talking about a Kusi who happens to be knowledgeable, and therefore he's not excluded by the Brisa that excluded Amoratsim, ignoramuses. Number two, Rav Omar, Afilu Tema Bikusi Amoretz. One can understand the Mishnah as referring to a Kusi who is an Amoretz. Now, as far as this Brisa is concerned, that you're not Mizamin al Amoretz, V'hocha, and here notice before we get into the Gemara, we have a long answer marking. It's the tough, it's encircled to meet the right hand side of the Gemara text with a descending vertical dashed line. All of these lines constitute the response. So V'hocha, the Gemara says, the Brisa that says aim is Amoretz, it's not referring to just your rank and file ignoramus, but it's V'hocha b'Amoretz d'Rabbanan d'Pligolel Reb Meir Askinan. Notice this is a phrase marking. You have to read all those words together. Here in the Brisa that says aim is Amoretz, we're talking about the Amoretz as described by the Rabbanan, who argue with Rebbe Meir in the following source, Desanya, Ezu Amoretz, what is an Amoretz? Kol Shenu Oichel Chulov B'Taro, the Rebbe Meir. A person who doesn't practice eating his mundane food in a state of ritual purity, he is an Amoretz. V'chachomim Omrim, and here's really what we have to focus on, they say, Kol She'eno Me'aser Peroisov Karoi, he who does not tithe his fruits properly. That is the Amoretz featured in Ein Mezam Ma'oretz. V'hani Kusoi Asri Me'asri Kidechazi. When it comes to the Kusi people, they are diligent in their tithing. In other words, Kidechazi means as is proper. They tithe properly. Regarding things that are accounted for in the Torah, and the laws of tithing are accounted for in the Torah, as we saw on the earlier today. So things like that, they are careful with. The Omar Mar, Kol Mitzvah Shechziku Bo Kusim, Harbe Medaktim Bo Yosim Yisrael. The mitzvahs that the kusim adopted or are care for, they're more diligent regarding those mitzvahs than your average Jewish person. Tanu Rabbanan. We have a Tanaic source that deals with the topic of what is an Amoretz. And here, in contrast with the issue before, where we were trying to focus our discussion on what is the Amoretz that doesn't join in a Zimun, here the question is, what is the Amoretz? Who is that that is referred to in general using the term Amoretz? Who did the Chazal have in mind when they say, make reference to an Amoretz? Ezu Amoretz. So here we have a number of opinions. The first is Kol She'eno Kori Kriyash Ma'arvis V'Shachos Rabbi Lezer. Anyone who does not doesn't read Kriyashma in the evening and in the morning. Rabbi Yeshua, that's Rabbi Lezer's opinion. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Kol She'eno Miniyach Tefillin. Anyone who doesn't lay Tefillin. Ben Azai Omer, Kol She'ein Lo Tzitzis Bevigdo. He who walks with four cornered garments without having tzitzis in them. Rabbi Nosson Omer calls She'ein Mezuzah Al Pischo. Anyone who doesn't have a mezuzah on his entranceway. Rabbi Nosson Bar Yosef Omer calls She'yesh Lo Bona Ve'eno Megadlom L'Talmud Torah. He who has children and does not raise them to Torah learning, doesn't ensure their Torah instruction. The Achirim go very far and they say even someone who is knowledgeable in the written Torah, the Mikra, and Shona, one who has learned Mishnayis. However, the expression means he did not learn Gemara, he did not learn Talmud, he is still classified as an Amoretz. We take a look at Rashi, Shaloshimesh Tamidi Chachamim. Hu HaGemara, it's an expression that some people like to offer a literal translation to, but that would be missing the point. The literal translation was, he who learned Mikra and Mishnah and did not serve Torah scholars. But the expression, Rashi tells you Hu HaGemara. It's a reference to Gemara learning, Hatluya B'Svara, Shoynosin L'Divrei Mishnah Tam. The essence of the Gemara is explanations, providing understanding to the Mishnayos. The Rabbanim used to gather together. This is, we're talking about the era of the formulation of the Talmud, and the Rabbanim used to gather together and involve themselves with this, with understanding the Mishnayos. V'hi dugmas haGemara shesidra amoroyim. When we say shaloshim shamchom, example par excellence of that is the Gemara that came from the Amoroyim. The Gemara continues, Omar of Huna, Halacha Ke'achirim. That when we use the term Amoretz, we use the definition according to the Achirim. So that according to this, if you have a person that knows his Tanakh, he knows his Mikra, and he knows his Mishnayos, he still is going to be labeled an Am Ha'oretz. The Gemara continues with a little incident. Rami Bar Chama lo azmin ole the Rav Menashe bar Tachlifa. Rami Bar Chama would not have Rav Menashe participate in a zimun. The Tani, and what was the nature of Rav Menashe? The Tani Sifra v'Sifri v'Hilchasa. Rav Menashe bar Tachlifa, he knew the midrashic works. The Sifra is the Medrash on Sefer Vayikra. The Sifri is the Medrash on Bamidbar and Devarim. The Hilchasa in other contexts is a reference to Mishnayos. This man, Rav Menashe, was what we would call quite knowledgeable in these different parts of Tanaic literature. And yet Rami Bar Chama would not have him, Rav Menashe, join in his Zimun. Very reminiscent of the Brisa we had above, the Shita of the Rabbi Meir, who said, Eiz Amar, it's called She'eno. Let's correct ourselves, rather, the Brisa before that, that said, Ein Mizamnin al Amoretz. It's true, the Rava gave his pshat to what that was, but when the Gemara raised the question before, that is it Kusi Nana Amoretz, and it said, the Gemara said there, you're not Mizamnin with Amoretz. It's true, Rava gave his pshat, he limited that, but if you look at the source at face value, we're saying, and we're justifying here, Rami Bar Chama, he didn't want to have Rav Menashe bar Tachlifa join in his Zimun because he didn't conform to the Shita Sachirim, that you have to be knowledgeable not only in Mikra Mishnah, but you also have to be knowledgeable in Talmudic sources. Kinoch nafshe de Rami Bar Chama, Omar Rava, when Rami Bar Chama passed away, Rava said, Lo noch nafshe de Rami Bar Chama, the only reason that he died, Elo de lo azmin arav Menashe bar Tachlifa. Because he did not have Rav Menashe, he would not allow Rav Menashe bar Tachlifa to join in a zimun, to create a zimun. The Gemara asks, is Rami bar Chama wrong? The Hot Tanya, but we have our source above. that even if he is knowledgeable in Tanaic literature but hasn't learned Talmud, he is an Amoretz, and we had the source before that said Ein Mezamnin al Amoretz. So what was? Why do you say that Rami Bar Chama died because of doing the right thing? Shiny Rav Menashe Bar Tachlifa, the Gemara explains that Rav Menashe Bar Tachlifa is different. In other words, he is not exactly what the Achirim are describing. The Mishma Lehul Rabbanon, Rami Bar Chama Hu Delo Doka Basrei. The word Demishma is the same as the word Shimesh. He was Shimesh Tamidei Chachamim. In other words, he did achieve the we'll call it Talmudic level of learning. So Rami Bar Chama was really wrong in not having Rav Menashe join in the Zimun and making creating a Zimun. Lishna Achrina, another explanation of what Rav Menashe's capabilities were. The Shama Shmeitza Mipumai the Rabbanu Vegaras Lahu. He was a person that heard the Torah learning of others, and he understood it and absorbed it. And someone like that, Kitzurba Rabbanan Dami, he's viewed as a Talmud Chacham. If one reads between the lines over here, it would seem that before the Gemara's answer, when describing someone who is called Shimesh Talmud Chacham, it would seem to describe someone who on their own is someone that is through their learning they come up with novel ideas, they are mechadesh things, and they offer explanations through their own power of learning. There is another type of learning, we'll say, that also grants someone the status of being a meshamesh shel chachamim, and that's someone who may not himself initiate the Torah scholarship, but he absorbs Torah scholarship when he hears it from others. And that's what the Gemara here is saying. That is also Kitzur B'Rabbanan. Kitzur is an expression referring to a Talmud Chacham, a Torah scholar as well. The Gemara continues with more quotes from the Mishnah. Ochal Tevel U'maisa Rishon Shalom Nitla Trumaso. If a person ate Tevel, which is untithed produce, or he ate from Maisa Rishon, whose Trumas Meiser was not removed. As we saw before, the Levi is expected to remove 10% from his Trumas Meiser and give to a Kohen. So if he ate these things, so the Mishnah says he is not going to be part of a Zimun. He doesn't create a Zimun. The Gemara asks, Tevel Pshita, well, guy ate untied produce. It's totally forbidden. It's obvious that he can't join in the Zimun. He ate something that's not fit to be eaten. The Gemara says, Lo tzricha, betevel tovul midrabanan. The tevel that he ate isn't the, we'll call it the Doraisa type of tevel, the Torah level tevel. We're talking about rabbinic level tevel. And that's the chiddush. Even so, he cannot be part of the Zimun. Hechi dami, what is an example of that? Be'otzit sheinu nakuv. This is an otzit is a flower pot, sheinu nakuv, that has no hole in it. A flower pot, we'll call it a container having plants growing in it, if there are holes in the bottom of it, so it's considered on a halachic basis attached to the ground, and as such needs to have tithing done properly as the Torah dictates. However, if the flower pot or the container does not have holes in it, it's considered totally detached from the ground, and as such there is no Torah level requirement of tithing being made. Nevertheless, the Rabbanan imposed the need to tithe from plants growing in receptacles, though they have no holes in it. So our Mishnah is talking about someone who ate produce from an unholed flower pot, and that is considered tevel, as we say, tevel midrabanan, but that's enough to exclude him from joining in a zimun. Meiser Rishon v'chulei, this is a reference to the Meiser Rishon that Levi received, and the Mishnah said that the shelo nitla trumaso, which meant that the Levi did not remove the tithe that he's expected to remove from it. So the Gemara asks, Pshita, well, it's obvious. And there's a certain assumption over here that we're talking, what tithe is the Levi expected to remove? He's expected to remove the Trumas Meiser, the 10% of that which he received. So if he didn't remove it, the Gemara says, well, Pshita, that's obvious. It's not something that is allowed to be eaten. So why does the Mishnah have to tell me that which is obvious? Lo yitzricha. No, he said the Mishnah is necessary. Kigoin Shigdimo Bikri. We're talking about a Levi that came before the Kohen at the point that the grains had received their Gemar Malacha. They were in a pile that was smoothed out. And Higdimo, the Levi, came before the Kohen to take his Truma, to take his Maiser Rishon. Mahu Detema, Kida Omar Le Rav Popol Abaye. One might have thought that in this case too, when the Levi comes early, maybe like Rav Papa suggested in his question to Abai, we have a little arrow to the middle right-hand side of the Gemara text indicating Omid Aleph. If you look back at the lower part of Omid Aleph, you'll notice a corresponding arrow. At that point in the Gemara, Rav Papa raised a question to Abai, saying to Abai, if it's true that the Levi, based on the pasuk quoted before in the Gemara, that all he has to remove is the Trumas Meiser, in the case that he came and took it in the stalk or sheave form, the name is he took his Maiserishan in that early stage, so maybe even if he takes it at a later stage, the Levi will be exempt from taking Truma Gedola off of his Maiserishan. So I might have thought, like Rav Papa suggested Rabbi, that the Levi is not expected to take off the Truma Gedola tithe, even when he takes the Truma, the Maiserishan in from the Kri. Our mission is telling us, like Abaye answered Rav Papa, and that is that the Levi is entitled to, we'll say, withhold or not mafrish the Truma Gedola only when he took it in sheev form. But where the Levi took it in kri, from in the kri form, then he is obligated to take off, in addition to the Truma Smeiser, the Truma Gedola that should have been taken off from this quantity of stuff that he came and took before the Kohen came around. So that's the case of Maiser Rishon Shalo Nitla Trumaso. It's not a reference to the Trumas Meiser. Trumas Meiser was taken, but he didn't remove the Truma Gedola that should have been removed from it. Maiser Sheni V'chule. And it went on to say, in addition to Maiser Sheni, also Hektish Shalo Niftu. These were not redeemed. And someone ate the food that had been either Maiser Rishon or food that was sanctified to the Beis HaMikdash but had not been redeemed. So it says in the Mishnah that he's not able to join in the Zimun. So to this too, the Gemara asks Pshita. It's obvious he can't join in the Zimun. He ate something that he should, that was forbidden to eat. He ate unredeemed Maiser Sheni, unredeemed Hektish food. Lo Tzricha, Sheniftu v'lo Niftu Kehichosan. They were redeemed, but they weren't redeemed following the details, the rules of halacha, of halachic redemption. And so the Mishnah is telling us a chiddush that even though there was an attempt to transfer the sanctity off of these things, and you ate what was thought to be redeemed produce, that he should be able to join in the Zimun. So the Mishnah is telling us that if you don't follow the rules of redemption, then it's not considered a redemption, and you're back to square one, and you're eating something that's improper, unfit for eating. What does it mean to be poda, to redeem, but do so improperly? Maiser Rishon, so the Gemara spells out the examples here of Maiser Rishon. The next line, the middle line, you see Hegdish. The Gemara will explain how you improperly redeem Hegdish. So Maiser Rishon, Kagon Shepodoi Al Gabi Asimoin. Asimoin is an unminted coin. In other words, it's a disc, a metallic disc, that if it were minted, it would have an imprimatur in it, so it would be called a coin. At this point, we might call it a slug. So he redeemed the Maiser Rishon onto an Asimon. Rachmon Amar, the Pasuk says, regarding the redemption of Maiser Sheni, the Pasuk says, V'tzarto ha-kesef biyodecha, and which literally means you shall tie up the money in your hands and take the money to Yerushalayim, but we darshan from this Pasuk, kesef sheyesh olav tzura. The word V'tzarto is associated with tzura, a form. So redeeming the sanctity of the Maiser Sheni onto Maiser Sheni, we should have mentioned, but sometimes we assume that everyone knows it's the fruit from the first, second, fourth, and fifth years of the sabbatical, the Shemitah cycle, that 10% of one's harvest he is expected to take it to Yerushalayim and eat there. In the event that he can't carry such a quantity, he has the option of redeeming it onto cash and using the cash money in Yerushalayim to buy foodstuffs, and he thereby fulfills his Maiser Sheni requirement. But the pasuk says that he shall redeem it onto something that has an imprimatur, as opposed to a slug. Therefore, redemption on a slug, and then going ahead and eating those fruits on the assumption that they've been redeemed, we say they haven't been redeemed. Hekdish, what is the case of improper redemption of hekdish? Shechilo al gabi karka v'lapodu b'kesef. Person transferred the sanctity that was imposed upon some food items, and how did he? What did he do with the sanctity? He transferred onto ground, onto land, onto property, onto real estate, and he didn't transfer it onto cash. For Rachmona Omer, the Torah says when you deal with the redemption of hekdish, it says v'nisato kesef ikomlo. You give the money value of whatever you're redeeming, you give that to the Beis HaMikdash, and then you get the item in exchange. But it has to be onto money, not a transfer of sanctity onto a piece of real estate. That just doesn't work. The waiter that joined a group of people but ate less than an olive quantity of food, he does not join in creating a zimun. So if you have two people who are eating and a shamash came along and nibbled on a certain quantity of food less than a kazayas, less than an alf quantity, there would be no zimun. We ask, well, pshita. It's obvious. He didn't fulfill any halachic level of eating. Less than a kazayas is not called eating. He didn't eat. So some more answers. You know, you're right. It is quite obvious. I did the ton of resha kazayas. The resha taught the case of the shamash that ate an alf quantity, and There was a chiddush, and we spelled that chiddush before, that even though he's a shamash, and you might have thought that he's not kavua over there, it's enough that he ate an olive quantity of food together with them to create a zimun. So Tana Seifa pochsim gzayis. Therefore, in contrast, the Seifa teaches a case of a shamash, but eating less than a gzayis, to give you a contrast. Even though there's no real novel point in this at this stage, the Mishnah said, "Vanochri emes amnalov a." Gentile is not someone that will create a zimun obligation. Pshita, that's obvious. A Gentile is not duty bound. He's not bound by Torah laws, and laws of birchas hamazon all don't apply to him. So he's irrelevant to the issue of a zimun. So that seems to be pshita. That's obvious. So the Gemara says, Hocha b'maaskinon, the Mishnah is talking about a very specific case. Beger shemov lo toval. We're talking about someone who is in the stages of conversion. What happened? He had been circumcised, but did not experience immersion in a mikveh. The Amar Bizer Amar Biyochanan the Olam Eino Ger Achimo VeYitboil. One is not considered a convert until he's completed all the required stages, until he's not only been circumcised but also has gone to the mikveh. The Kamadulotoval, and as long as he hasn't gone to the mikveh, Nochri, who is still considered a full-fledged Gentile, and hence not, he's considered irrelevant and doesn't create an obligation for Zimun. Noshim Vavonim Muktanim Ein Mezamna Leim. The Mishnah said that women, slaves, and minors do not create a Zimun scenario. Omar Rabbi Asi, Kotan Hamutal Barisa Mezamna Olav. An infant, cotton is a minor, lying in a cradle. An aris is a cradle. He creates a zimun. The Gemara asks, well, tonight, but we learned in the Tanaic source, Noshim Avonim Ketanim Ein Mezamna Leim. It says here, we dashed underline the word Ketanim because this is what we're focusing on. Minors are not people capable of creating a zimun requirement. So where is Rav Asi coming from? The Gemara answers, Hu the Amar Kriyav Yeshua ben Levi. Rav Asi is based on Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi's teaching, and you'll notice we have triangles here. They highlight that we've written under our Mivneh heading, Sidur Shel Memros, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, being in Siruf, the Ode. A number of comments of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi concerning this matter of joining up for a Zimun, and other comments of his. So we're saying for right now that Rav Asi, who said Kotel Mutar Brisa, is based on Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. The Omar Rabbi Shua ben Levi, Afal Pi Shomu Kotan Amutu Bariso Ein Mezamna Lov. Rabbi Shua ben Levi has said that even though it has been said that an infant lying in a cradle does not create a zimun, nevertheless, Aval Oisinus Snif La Asora. A snif means something that joins up. So that it would seem from this that the the source that was quoted, that Noshon Adon Katan, Eim Zamer Lehem, that's a reference to your basic Zimun of three people. That if one third of your people, is 33% would be the Kotan, so he doesn't join up to create a unit of three. However, if you have nine people that ate together, and there is also a child lying in a cradle, he makes it into ten. The Omer of Shulman Levi, Tisha the Eved Mitztarfin. Nine Jews and a slave. The slave joins up to create a unit of ten. We mentioned earlier in our shiur that when you have a group of ten, so then we add the name of Hashem in the Zimun. This is what we've seen in our discussions concerning Zimun, that when you have ten, as opposed to less than ten, now with ten you mention the name of Hashem. So Rav Shimon Levi says that nine and an eved is mitzaref, joins up to create ten. Meisvei, we have the following Tanaic source. Meisvei Rebbe Elazar shenichlas veis haknesses v'lomotza asora. Rebbe Elazar entered a shul and there weren't ten people there. Apparently there were eight people, and now Rebbe Elazar enters, there's nine, and he happened to be along with his eved. V'shichur avdo v'shlimu asora. He freed his slave, making now ten people. Shichur in, lo shichur lo. Only if the slave is freed does he help to join up to create ten. But unfreed, he does not create ten. The Gemara, so the question right now is, how can Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi say that an Eved is mashlim, the nine into ten, creates a unit of ten, when you see from this story that involving Rabbi Elazar that only since he freed him does he constitute the tenth man, but otherwise no. The Gemara answers, Trey, it's the Rihu. The story that we just read about Rabbi Elazar having set his Eved free is because there was a situation that they were missing two people. They needed two people. In other words, there was a sum total of eight Jews that were assembled in the shul. They have eight Jews, and they were missing two. So what did Rabbi Elazar do? Shichrer chad v'nofik b'chad. He freed one of the two slaves that happened to be with him, and they were yotzei with one slave, meaning he was the tenth man. So you had, once Rabbi Elazar was meshachrer one of the two slaves, that got them up to nine, because a slave that's freed, we should point out, has a din of a full-fledged Jew. So with the freedom of one of the two, you now had nine, and the other slave did not have to be freed, based on Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi's halacha that Tisha v'Eved mitztarfin. The Gemara asks, "V'hechi Ovid Hachi? How could Rabbi Elazar free a slave?" Amar Rav Yehuda, "Kol meshachar avdo oiver ba'asei." Rabbi Yehuda says, "Anyone who frees a slave is in violation of a positive Torah command. Shenemar le'olam bohem tavodu. Forever you shall enslave them." So the Torah is instructing me, keep them as slaves, don't free them. What's Rabbi Elazar doing, freeing a slave? The Gemara answers, Lidvar mitzvah shiny. Well, he did it with a mitzvah intention. The Gemara asks, well, so what? Mitzvah bo baverhi. You're accomplishing a mitzvah, but through committing an avera. And the avera is the mitzvah may have been to have a minion, have a quorum of people, but you're achieving that through freeing a slave. So the Gemara answers, mitzvah de rabim shiny. This is a very unique situation where it's a mitzvah of the public. And as Rashi says, lahotzi rabim yedei chavosim bekedusha. So in such a case, we'll just have to say that it's not classified as a mitzvah habo b'avera, but it's considered a full-fledged mitzvah. The Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Le'olam yashkim odom lebeis haknesses kidei shiyizke v'imne im asor rishonim. A person should always strive to wake up early to go to shul and be with the first 10 people. Shafilu mea boi machrov, even if 100 more people come afterwards. Kibel olav schar kulam. Now here we translate literally, and the Gemara will correct it, but it's he's saying that as being one of the first of the 10 people, he gets all of their reward. That would make you think that that the other people that came afterwards are not with any reward. That's hard to believe. So rather, so the Gemara asks, are you telling me that he, because he's one of the first ten, so he gets all of their reward, all the reward of people that came afterwards? What he means to say is that the person who was one of the first ten, he gets an amount of reward that would be the equivalent of the sum total of the reward of all those that came to the shul afterwards. So it's a very good investment to be one of the first ten in a shul. Omar Rav Huna, Tisha v'Aron Mitztarfin. Rav Huna says that if you have nine people and the Torah ark where the Sifrei Torah kept, so that is mitzaref to create ten. Omar Le Rav Nachman. What we've done in our with our markings, you see, we've double underlined Rav Nachman's name. You see that he has a similar response to a couple of suggestions that will be coming along the way in the Gemara. So Rav Nachman says, "The Aaron Gavrahu, the ark, is a man. How do you account for the ark constituting the tenth man?" Elom Rav Huna, Tisha Nirin Kasora Mitztarfin. Rather, Rav Huna's point was that nine, it's a relatively speaking a large group of people, they look like ten. So that nine, since it looks like a group of ten, they can have a zimun. Now when you say that nine creates the impression of ten, we have two opinions. Amri lo ki mechanfi, v'amri lo ki mivdari. One opinion says that's when they're mechanfi, when they're all gathered together, when nine people are clustered in a tight cluster, then they look like ten. The other opinion says no, only when they're scattered out, then and you're looking around and you see, you, if you were to count them carefully, you'd see nine people, but if just by looking around casually, when they're mivdari means scattered, the nine look like ten. Omar Rav Ami, Omar Rav Ami, Shnayim v'Shabbos Mitztarfin. If you have two people eating a meal together on Shabbos, so it's the two plus the fact that it's Shabbos, it's Mitztarf to create three. Amar Le Rav Nachman v'Shabbos Gabrahu, same type of reaction Rav Nachman has here as we saw before. The Shabbos day is a man. How do you call Shabbos a third person? Elo Omar Rav Ami. Rather, understand as follows. What Rav Ami said was Shnei Talmidei Chachamim hamechadedin zeh zeh b'halacha mitztarfin. Two Talmudic sages, two Torah scholars that are literally sharpening one another in halacha through their learning together and their argumentation one with the other. So the two are mitztarfin to be considered three. The truth is that on this topic we recommend looking at a sefer that's found in the back of many shases, the Shas commentaries, the Rash Katzin Leboygin, who elaborates on this particular topic. Machvi Rav Chista, Rav Chista pointed out regarding this halacha of Rav Ami, who said two Talmid Chachamim that sit and learn with one another and sharpen each other, so they're considered like three. So Rav Nachman points out Kigon Anov Rav Sheshes, an example of these two Talmid Chachamim that would be sharpening each other would be like myself and Rav Sheshes. Machvi Rav Sheshes, and Rav Sheshes pointed out Kigon Anov Rav Chista, a group like myself and Rav Chista would fill this requirement, or fill the bill of Rav Ami's din to Talmidei Chachamim. But it's not just some casual Talmidei Chachamim, it would be someone like Rav Chista and Rav Sheshes, as the Gemara, as they say. Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Koton Poreach Mezamnen Olav. The Rashi, Koton Poreach, Shehevi Simonim Velo Bo Lechlal Shonav. We're talking about a child who is developing. He has pubic signs, even though he does not have the age of 13 and a day. So he's still a minor, but producing pubic signs. That's Koton Poreach Mizamnin Olav. He can join up to create a Zimun. Tanya Nami Hochi, we have a Tanaic source. Now, as we read the Tanaic source, we want just to note or bear in mind that though the Gemara says Tanya Nami Hochi, this source supports that teaching of Rabbi Yochanan, you really have to read on in the Gemara till the top of Omid, of the next Omid of Daf Mem Ches Omid Aleph, to see the point. So the Gemara says, Tanya Nami Hochi, we have a Tanaic source supporting Rabbi Yochanan, Koton Poreach Mizamnin Olav. It says in the source, Koton, Aleph, Shehevi Shtei Sarsim Zanolov, if he's produced the two pubic hairs that are the sign of adulthood, so he joins to create a Zimun, Vishalevi Shtei Sarsim Aim Zanolov. But if he hasn't produced the two pubic hairs, he is not capable of creating a Zimun. The Ain, Medaktikin Bekotan, and one is not to be too rigid or scrupulous with regard to determining this matter of a Kotan, whether he is no longer considered a Kotan. The Gemara asks, in looking at this source, Ha Gufa Kashio, this source seems to be inherently contradictory. Amris, you say on the one hand, Hevi Shtei Saris, if the boy produced two pubic hairs in, then yes, he becomes a member of a Zimun. Loi Hevi Loi, but if he hasn't produced the two hairs, so he doesn't join in the Zimun. Seeming a very clear cut breakdown or break point. The Hodr Tani, and then in the same source it says Ein Medaktin Bekotan, that we're not so careful and so particular about a Kotan. In other words, even if he still is technically a Kotan, we could still Mezamnen Olav. So how do you resolve this? What's this source trying to communicate? So the Gemara points out La Suye Mai, this point of Ein Medaktik Mekotin, what is being included by this term? Lav La Suye Koton Porech. Is it not coming to include the case of Koton Porech? And Rashi says at the top, La Suye Koton Porech, She'ein Medaktikin Boy Im Bol Chal Shonim Olav. When we say we're not careful and we're not picky about him, that means to determine whether he's reached 13 years and a day or not. Umahin Shanim, what is the Shanim? What is the standard of years? Yud Gimel Shanim V'yom Echad. So the Koton Poreach is a minor who has produced the pubic hairs but hasn't reached the age of adulthood, namely hasn't reached 13 and a day. So regarding someone like that, we are being taught here by Rabbi Yochanan Koton Poreach, he can join in creating a Zimun unit. The Gemara, however, says "Veles hilchasa kechol hani shmeitza." The halacha will not follow all of these teachings that we've had till now. Ela ki ha di omar Rav Nachman, but rather in conformity to Rav Nachman. Koten hayde lemi mevarchim mezam lolav. If you have a minor that understands to whom we are blessing, in other words, he's aware of an Almighty, and it's to him, it is he that we are praising. So then he can join in a zimun. Abaye v'Rava haviyasvi kamei d'Rava. A little incident here involving Abaye and Rava that were seated in the presence of Rava. Called Rava was their teacher, their master. Omar lehu Rava. Rava turns to these youngsters, Abaye and Rava. At this point, they were young, and he asked them l'mim avorchim. When we make a bracha, when we utter a benediction, unto whom are we saying the bracha? Who is being praised? Who is being blessed? So Amri Le L'Rachmona. So they answered Rava, the Almighty. So Rava asks Rachmona, Hecha Yosef, where does the Almighty sit? Where is he located? Rava Achvi L'Shmei Tuala. Rava pointed to the ceiling beams, pointed upwards. Abaye nofik lebra, achvi klabishmaya. Abaye walked outside, and we're talking about boys here. He walked outside and he pointed heavenwards. Omaluhu Rabba. Rabba addresses them and says, Travaychu Rabbanon Havisa, you two will be Torah scholars. In other words, they were quite young and understood this matter of unto whom do we bless, and they were aware of the fact that the Almighty is all over. And that gave Rabba the sign that they will develop into something worthwhile Torah-wise. Hainu Diamri Inshi, based on it's similar to this story. Based on this story, people will say Butzin Butzin Mikatfe Yedia. Taking a look at Rashi, Butzin Delas. Butzin is a reference to a the last, a type of vegetation. Some people like to translate it as a pumpkin. Ve'is degarsi mikatfe, k'taf hu sraf hu ilon. Klomar, mishoshu chonet, v'yotz mitoch asraf, nikur im yetov. the katfe is, as Rashi says, is the sap, or it's like a type of syrup that comes from trees and also from certain types of vegetation. So if one tastes the sap, even at an early stage of fruit development, from, as Rashi says, from the point chone, that the item blossoms, a person will already be able to determine whether the fruit will be good or not. So the parallel being, Abaye and Rava were very young here, and yet they showed, they demonstrated wisdom at this young age. And from this, we conclude that the fruits that will produce, namely they, as they mature, as they get older, they will become something very special. And so it really was. This concludes today's Gemara section of Gemara Markings Daf Yomi. For those who are interested, our site offers a shiur on today's Daf Yomi Tosfos, presenting the Tosfos text with explanation.